And of course they did none of these dreadful things, and everything was cleaned and put away safe as quick as lightning, while the hobbit was turning round and round in the middle of the kitchen trying to see what they were doing. Then they went back and found Thorin with his feet on the fender smoking a pipe. He was blowing the most enormous smoke rings, and wherever he told one to go, it went. Up the chimney, or behind the clock on the mantelpiece, or under the table, or round and round the ceiling. But wherever it went, it was not quick enough to escape Gandalf. Pop! He sent a smaller smoke ring from his short clay pipe, straight through each one of Thorin's. The Gandalf smoke ring would go green and come back to hover over the wizard's head. He had quite a cloud of them about him already. And in the dim light, it made him look strange and sorcerous. Bilbo stood still and watched. He loved smoke rings, and then he blushed to think how proud he had been yesterday of the smoke rings he had sent up the wind over the hill. "Now for some music," said Thorin. "Bring out the instruments." Keeley and Feely rushed for their bags and brought out little fiddles. Dori, Nori, and Ori brought flutes from somewhere inside their coats. Bomber produced a drum from the hall. Biffer and Bofur went out too, and came back with clarinets that they had left among the walking sticks. Dwalin and Balin said, "Excuse me, I left mine on the porch." "Just bring in mine with you," said Thorin. They came back with vials as big as themselves, and with Thorin's harp wrapped in a green cloth. It was a beautiful golden harp, and when Thorin struck it, the music began all at once, so sudden and sweet that Bilbo forgot everything else and was swept away into dark lands under strange moons, far over the water and very far from his hobbit hole under the hill. The dark came across the room from the little window that opened in the side of the hill. The firelight flickered. It was April, and still they played on, while the shadows of Gandalf's beard wagged against the wall. The dark filled the room, and the fire died down, and the shadows were lost, and still they played on. And suddenly, first one and then the other began to sing as they played, deep-throated singing of the dwarves in the deep places of their ancient homes. And this is like a fragment of their song, if it can be like their song without their music. Far over the misty mountains cold, to dungeons deep and caverns old, we must away ere break of day to seek the pale enchanted gold. The dwarves of yore made mighty spells, while hammers fell like ringing bells, in places deep where dark things sleep, in hollow halls beneath the fells. For ancient king and elvish lord, there a many gloaming golden hoard, they shaped and wrought, and light they caught, to hide in gems and hilt of sword. On silver necklaces they strung the flowering stars, on crowns they hung the dragon fire and twisted wire, they meshed the light of moon and sun. Far over the misty mountains cold, to dungeons deep and caverns old, we must away ere break of day to claim our long-forgotten gold. Goblets they carved there for themselves, and harps of gold where no man delves. There they lay long, and many a song was heard, was sung unheard by men or elves. The pines were roaring on the height, the winds were moaning in the night. The fire was red, it flaming spread, the trees like torches biased with light. The bells were ringing in the dale, and men looked up with faces pale. The dragon's ire, more fierce than fire, laid low their towers and houses frail. The mountain smoked beneath the moon, the dwarves, they heard the tramp of doom. They fled their hall to dying fall, beneath his feet, beneath the moon. Far over the misty mountains grim, to dungeons deep and caverns dim, we must away ere break of day to win our harps and gold from him. As they sang, the hobbit fell in love with the beautiful things made by hands, and by cunning and magic moving through him, a fierce and jealous love, the desire of the hearts of dwarves. Then something tookish woke up in him. and he wished to go and see the great mountains and hear the pine trees and the waterfalls, explore the caves and wear a sword instead of a walking stick. He looked out the window. The stars were out in the dark sky above the trees. He thought of the jewels of the dwarves shining in dark caverns. Suddenly in the wood beyond the water a flame leapt up, probably someone lighting a wood fire, and he thought of plundering dragons settling on his quiet hill and kindling it all aflames. He shuddered, and very quickly he was plain Mr. Baggins of Bag End Underhill again. He got up trembling. He had less than half a mind to fetch a lamp, and more than half a mind to pretend to, and to go hide behind the beer barrels in the cellar, and not come out again until all the dwarfs had gone away. Suddenly he found that the music and the singing had stopped, and they were all looking at him with eyes shining in the dark. "Where are you going?" said Thorin, in a tone that seemed to know that he guessed both halves of the hobbit's mind. "What about a little light?" said Bilbo apologetically. "We like the dark," said the dwarves. "Dark for dark business. There are many hours before dawn." "Of course," said Bilbo, and sat down in a hurry. He missed the stool and sat on the fender, knocking over the poker and shovel with a crash. "Hush," said Gandalf. "Let Thorin speak." And this is how Thorin began. "Gandalf, dwarves, and Mr. Baggins, we are not together in the house of our friend and fellow conspirator, this most excellent and audacious hobbit. May the hair on his toes never fall out. All praise to his wine and ale." He paused for a breath and for a polite remark from the hobbit, but the compliments were quite lost on poor Bilbo Baggins, who was wagging his mouth in protest at being called audacious and, worst of all, a fellow conspirator. Though no noise came out, he was so flummoxed. So Thorin went on. "We are met to discuss our plans, our ways, means, policy, and devices. We shall soon before the break of day start on a long journey, a journey from which some of us, or perhaps all of us, except our friend and counselor, the ingenious wizard of Gandalf, may never return. It is a solemn moment. Our subject is, as I take it, well known to us all. To the estimable Mr. Baggins, and perhaps to one or two of our younger dwarves, I think I should be right in naming Keeley and Feely, for instance. The exact situation of the moment may require a little brief explanation." This was Thorin's style. He was an important dwarf. If he had been allowed, he probably would have gone on like this until he was out of breath, without telling anyone there anything they had not known already. But he was rudely interrupted. Poor Bilbo couldn't handle it any longer. At "may never return," he began to feel a shriek coming up inside, and very soon it burst forth like the whistle of an engine coming out of a tunnel. All the dwarves sprang up, knocking over the table. Gandalf struck a blue light on the edge of his magic staff, and in the firework glare the poor little hobbit could be seen kneeling on the hearth rug, shaking like a jelly that was melting. Then he fell flat on the floor, and kept calling out, struck by lightning," over and over again. And that was all they could get out of him for a long time. So they took him and laid him out of the way on the drawing-room sofa, with a drink at his elbow. And they went back to their dark business. "Excitable little fellow," said Gandalf as they sat down again. "Gets funny queer fits, but he is one of the best. One of the best, as fierce as a dragon in a pinch." If you have ever seen a dragon in a pinch, you will realize that this was only poetical exaggeration applied to any hobbit, even to old Took's great-granduncle Bullroarer, who was so huge, for a hobbit, that he could ride a horse. He charged the ranks of the goblins of Mount Graham on the Battle of the Green Fields, and knocked over King Gurfinbull's head clean off with a wooden club. It sailed 100 yards to the air and went down a rabbit hole, and in this way the battle was won, and the game of golf invented at the same moment. In the meanwhile, however, Bullroarer's gentler descendant was reviving in the drawing-room. After a while, and a drink, he crept nervously to the door of the parlor. This is what he heard Glenn speaking. "Humph," or some short snort, more or less like that. "Will he do, you think? It is all very well for Gandalf to talk about this hobbit being fierce, but one shriek like that in a moment of excitement would be enough to wake the dragon and all his relatives. That killed a lot of us. I think it sounded more like fright than excitement. In fact, if it had not been for the sign on the door, I was sure we had come to the wrong house. As soon as I clapped eyes on the little fellow, bobbing and puffing on the mat, I had my doubts. He looks more like a grocer than a burglar. Then Mr. Baggins turned the handle and went in. The Took side had won. He suddenly felt he would go without bed and breakfast to be thought fierce. As for the little fellow bobbing on the mat, it really almost did make him fierce. Many a time afterwards, the Baggins part regretted what he did now, and he said to himself, "Bilbo, you were a fool. You walked right in and put your foot into it." "Pardon me," he said, "if I have overheard words you were saying. I don't pretend to understand what you were talking about, or your reference to burglars, but I think I am right in believing," this is what he called, being on his dignity, "that you think I am no good. I will show you. I have no signs on my door. It was painted a week ago, and I am quite sure you have come to the wrong house. As soon as I saw your funny faces on the doorstep, I had my doubts. But treat it as the right one. Tell me what you want done, and I will try it. If I have to walk from here to the east of east and fight the wild wereworms in the last desert. I had a great-great-great-great-granduncle once, Bull Roarer Took, and—" "Yes, yes, but that was a long time ago," said Gloin. "I was talking about you. And I assure you there is a mark on the door, the usual one in the trade, or used to be. Burglar wants a good job, plenty of excitement, and reasonable reward. That's usually how it's read." "You say an expert treasure hunter instead of burglar, if you like. Some of them do. It's all the same to us. Gandalf said that there was a man of those sorts in these parts looking for a job at once, and that he had arranged for a meeting here this Wednesday at tea time." "Of course there is a mark," said Gandalf. "I put it there myself, for very good reasons. You asked me to find the 14th man for your expedition, and I chose Mr. Baggins. Just let any one of you say I chose the wrong man or the wrong house, and you can stop at 13 and have all the bad luck you like. Or go back to digging coal." He scowled so angrily at Gloin that the dwarf huddled back in his chair, and when Bilbo tried again to open his mouth to ask a question, he turned and frowned at him and stuck out his bushy eyebrows till Bilbo shut his mouth tight with a snap. "That's right," said Gandalf. "Let's have no more argument. I have chosen Mr. Baggins, and that ought to do well enough for all of you. If I say he is a burglar he is, or will be when the time comes. There's a lot more in him than you guess, and a deal more than he has any idea of himself. You may possibly all live to thank me yet. Now, Bilbo, my boy, fetch the lamp, and let's have a little light on this."